We're continuing this week in our mini-series running up to Easter on Jesus in the Old Testament. And this is a mini-sermon, if you like. As Vincent explained at the question and answer session a week and a half ago, from time to time we're doing shorter sermons, so there's more time to spend doing other things in the service. And this is one of those weeks. So I've asked Darren to come and read the passage to us. It's all of Isaiah 53. Please follow it as he does and keep it open when he's finished.
Okay, Isaiah 53. Who has believed our message? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. Yet who of his generation protested? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was punished. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors.
Very good. Thank you, Darren. Just recently, two of my favourite television shows, Hustle and Spooks, have finished forever. More's the pity. So when I watch TV these days, I find myself watching DVDs more often than I used to. I have to say, I usually only load the first of the two discs that you get. But on the rare occasions that I've looked at the second disc, the special features, I see there's often a director's commentary on the whole film, where basically, as I understand it, you watch the whole film again, but with Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola or whoever directed the film yabbering over the top of it, saying things such as, well, this is the key moment when she realizes that he's been cheating on her, look at her eyes, or something like that, or notice how the music here builds up as the door begins to open. So it gives an explanation as to what's going on. Has anyone ever watched the entire director's commentary for a film all the way through? I don't know why I'm looking at the students in the congregation. Is that unfair? No. Okay. That is unfair. There we are. Anyhow, what we have in this passage is the director's commentary for Easter. This is what God might be saying over the images of Jesus on trial, Jesus on the cross, and Jesus risen again. Because that's what this passage is about. It's about Jesus. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you will have spotted that this is in the Old Testament, which was written centuries before Jesus walked the earth. But what this passage does, it predicts what Jesus would do and what the results would be. It's one of the richest prophecies in the Old Testament about Jesus. You could do an entire sermon series on this chapter alone rather than 15 minutes, which is all I've got. So I just want to draw three things out from this passage about Jesus, three contradictions, if you like. So here they are. Jesus is the guilty, innocent, guilty one. Jesus is the despised, exalted one. And Jesus is the suffering, satisfied one. So let's take these in turn. So firstly, Jesus is the guilty, innocent, guilty one. Now, two of these are plain from the Easter story in the New Testament that you may well be very familiar with, and they're referred to here. So what's clear from the Easter story is how Jesus, an innocent man, is found guilty in a kangaroo court set up by the Jewish authorities. Do you see an innocent man found guilty? Have a look at verse 9. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. He was condemned to death, or assigned a grave with the wicked, as it says here, though he was innocent of the violence or deceit that might have merited such a punishment under the law of the time. He was put to death by the Roman authorities on Good Friday, even though their representative, who was called Pilate, said that he found no charge against the man. So he was the victim of an earthly injustice, an innocent, guilty man. But this is where the director's commentary of Isaiah 53 kicks in. Although Jesus suffered an earthly injustice, he brought about a cosmic justice, the like of which has never been seen before and will never be seen again. What's God saying in this passage? Well, he's saying this. He's saying, look at what really is going on here. This man, my beloved son, is becoming guilty for you. Beyond the nails and the thorny crown and the agony of suffocation on the cross, there's another dynamic at play here. As the skies darken over the cross, the wickedness of the world is heaped on Jesus, and God turns his face away in disgust at the evil now borne by his son. Jesus, the innocent man, becomes guilty. And what a guilt he bears. Have you perhaps ever known a guilt over something you've done and known that there must be a reckoning for it? I wonder how that made you feel. The psalmist in Psalm 38 says, my guilt has overwhelmed me like a burden too heavy to bear. But often there's an opportunity for us, with a guilt that we may feel, to come clean about what we've done to a person that we've hurt, perhaps. There's some way out. And if you're lucky, if you come clean to the person that you've hurt, there may be quick forgiveness. Otherwise, there may be a process of rebuilding of relationships. But by bringing things into the open, you can start to deal with the guilt. You can start to shift some of the burden, so to speak. But not Jesus. There was no opportunity for him to confess and to be relieved of his burden, because the guilt that he carried was not his own. The pain was unrelenting. Also, it was the guilt not just of one man, but of all men. Do you see that from verse 6? We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Iniquity is a funny word. It's defined in my dictionary as meaning gross injustice or wickedness. So the passage tells us that Jesus carried the gross injustice and wickedness of all mankind. Now, if you've done something wrong, how guilty you feel depends on what you've done, doesn't it? Imagine if you broke a plate in the kitchen, how guilty would you feel? Not very guilty, I imagine, unless the plate was particularly special to someone, or you'd thrown it at your spouse, or whatever. But imagine if you committed an act of gross injustice or wickedness, which is what the Bible tells us was the dynamic here when it talks about iniquity. How guilty would you feel at having committed this act of gross injustice or wickedness? Well, I suggest that many of us would feel weighed down by a huge burden of grief, particularly if the wrong deed was to have serious repercussions for those that we loved. And now imagine that you carry that grief multiplied by all mankind. Jesus was crushed and made guilty. He bore the punishment that our gross injustice and wickedness demanded that we pay. He became the guilty, innocent, guilty man. One more thing before we move on. Have a look at that verse 6. Look with me at how it's structured. Do you see how the first two words of verse 6 and the last two words of verse 6 match? All the world has rebelled against God, and by Jesus becoming guilty for us, the reprieve that he brought about is available to all the world. Do you see what that means? It means that anyone who follows Jesus, for them, there is no injustice, there is no wickedness that they can do that Jesus' death has not covered. We still do wrong things, but this passage serves as a reminder that the Lord has laid on Jesus all the wrongs we have done and all the wrongs we will do. We have assurance that because Jesus died on the cross, we will be accepted despite those things because of the price he paid. So look, if you're ever tempted to feel that you've placed yourself outside God's rescue because of the awful thing you've done, just remember, the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus is the guilty, innocent, guilty one. Jesus is also the despised, exalted one. Have a look at verse 3. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like that, or if you've seen it happen to another. When I was at school, there was a boy in my boarding house who was called William, and William didn't fit in. He wasn't a very nice character, and he was seen as fair game for bullying. It was awful to witness as he was taunted and mocked by others. To my shame, I didn't intervene, but I hid my face from him, literally, as I didn't want him to see me. I didn't want any part in the bullying, but I wasn't prepared to stop it. In the boarding house, he was despised and held in low esteem. Now, you can usually tell what happens to these people. They grow up with a monkey on their back, with a gnawing resentment that follows them through their lives. What they don't generally do is flourish in society and rise to positions of power. And here from this passage, we see that the Christian faith doesn't always follow that path. Jesus experienced during his life being driven out of towns, having his life put at risk, ultimately having his life taken. And yet we read in verse 12, "Therefore I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong." The despised man becomes great. The director's commentary once again kicks in. God is saying, "Do you see how he's laid low by those whipping him? I will lift him high. Do you see how he's nailed to a cross? I will seat him on a throne." After his death, Jesus is made great by God, and his greatness is increased by the suffering he has experienced. This is one of the great truths of the Christian faith. Don't trust your eyes. Don't trust your eyes, for what may look like a defeat may prove to be ultimately a victory. When we're despised and rejected by friends or family because we follow Jesus, the Bible teaches that we too will be made great. You remember what we heard recently in Romans 8. "Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory." We share in sufferings and we share in glory. Despised, exalted. Jesus was the despised, exalted one. Finally, Jesus was the suffering, satisfied one. Verse 3 describes Jesus as a man of suffering and familiar with pain. And of course, Jesus' sufferings are there for all to see at Good Friday. tortured by the Romans, forced to carry his cross, mocked and suffocated to death over several hours on a cross. The Bible says that before he died in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus was in so much anguish at the prospect of what he had to face that the sweat ran down his face like blood. It says in Hebrews chapter 5 that Jesus offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. Clearly, this was not a man who was whistling a happy tune. Yet verse 11 of this passage talks of Jesus being satisfied with the light of life and with the results of his suffering. By his knowledge, it says, my righteous servant will justify many. What does this mean? Was Jesus suffering or was he satisfied? Well, the answer this passage gives is both. We've already touched on the crushing weight of the guilt that Jesus bore. There can be no enjoyment in being torn apart from your Father for the first time in all eternity. Jesus suffered like no one ever has and no one ever will. And yet, he was satisfied with the light of life. That is, he was satisfied with his resurrection, as it showed that the purpose of the cross in making a way open to God had been achieved. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us that Jesus went through Good Friday for the joy set before him. All that suffering for future joy. What joy? Well, to paraphrase Tim Keller on this, what was the one thing Jesus didn't have before Easter, which he had after Easter? It wasn't glory. He had glory before the creation of the world. It wasn't the love of his Father. He always had that, and he had to lose it on the cross. Now, the one thing that drove Jesus on, the one thing that he didn't have before Easter that he had afterwards, the cause of his satisfaction, the joy set before him, was us. Jesus was satisfied because through the cross and the resurrection, he got us. Once again, the director's commentary kicks in. Do you see my son suffering? Do you see why? It's for you. He wants you. He's satisfied to get you. What does this mean for us? Well, Jesus was the guilty, innocent, guilty one. He was made guilty so that we can be reckoned innocent of anything we have done or will do. No one can accuse those who Jesus has made innocent. Jesus is the despised, exalted one. So we know that when we suffer persecution for the sake of the gospel, God will exalt us. And Jesus is the suffering, satisfied one. Jesus went through suffering because of his joy at getting us. Grasping hold of that means that we can have the power to endure what comes our way because of our joy at getting him. That's the director's commentary in this passage, and that's what this passage tells us about Easter. Amen.